Welcome to the Minute Maid Gang Podcast, episode 216. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with only one gang member today, Phil Wilson.
That's right. We're a duo.
We're not. Yeah, we can't be a gang if there's only two of us, right? We're a couple.
We're vetting members. That's what's happening.
We're what?
We're vetting members.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Well, Tim has got family adventures going on, and Graham is with his bride, setting up one of her shows. So
he's going to hopefully join us a little later.
Yeah.
So that'll be fine. We could talk about him and Tim while they're gone until then.
Well, you know, there's been many times where I've thought that you and I should do a show.
Oh, sure.
Pick a topic and just do it.
I think so.
It would just be fun to do.
And this is that show.
That's right. We can fulfill and live our dreams.
That's right. Dreams are coming true right here on Midnight.
Oh God.
Yeah, dreams are coming true. So let's see I missed the cast last week, and I'm not sure if you guys referenced the piece I did on Midwest Mobile Summit.
We did a little bit, but it would be nice to hear your perceptions and
I just wanted to touch base, and I thought those guys did a great job. First year event, and I remember doing the first year of Mobile March and all the challenges that come with that. And they did some great stuff, and I just think it was a well done event for a market the size of Fargo, and it helped showcase a little of the old downtown in Fargo. Or is it the new downtown? I don't even know if
it was in the theater, the old.
It started in the theater, and then there were two other sites that were within walking distance, and which I thought was kind of nice. Now, that would suck in February, but it wasn't too bad to go from the theater space to there was a little small performance space and then an art gallery that they actually used. Lots to be done. In Fargo, they had a lot of participation from Fargo companies that were using mobile. There were a great deal of case studies. So I thought it was a good event, and I hope it continues to grow. It's quite the hump. It's, 4 hours from here, but,
depending on who drives, I can make it in 3.5.
Nope. So I can't imagine I could drive any faster. Life in peril. But now,
that's right. You're way the hell down in Lakeville. I forgot.
Yeah, it's 3.5 or 4. So it's not too bad. And, you get to go through St. Cloud. How bad can that be?
That's right. Well, I spent a lot of my formative youth. My grandparents lived in Moorhead. My grandpa was a electrical, engineer that fixed the signals and all the stuff on the side of the tracks and so forth. They lived in Moorhead right across the river. And we spent a lot of time in Fargo. And of course, you look at Moorhead, I don't want to diss Moorhead, but you look at Moorhead and just about everybody's moved to Fargo. So, especially for tax reasons too.
It's like a two-foot move. So it's not
exactly. Yeah.
So let me ask you though, growing up with your, as a teenager, as a prepubescent teenager and teenager, visiting a place like Moorhead, was that like an endless amount of jokes for that? Is that?
No, oh, please. No,
it wasn't.
No, not at all.
I mean,
never,
I am
actually,
I am, I'm over 50 and I'm having a hard time holding back making jokes about Moorhead.
Well, that's because you're disgusting and dirty, as the way you think.
And isn't that what a teenager would do? I mean,
I'm sure.
Steve, come on, you're in junior high school, and you're telling your buddies, "Yeah, I'm going to Moorhead this weekend." Come on,
seriously, it never came up. Seriously, nobody ever said anything about it. That's amazing to me, I guess.
Well, my friends that go visit Handjob, Tennessee, are always making jokes.
I'm going to call Lori and tell her to listen to this particular show.
Oh, I crack myself.
I know you are just what a kidder.
What a kidder I am.
We have to talk about the pivot that Spark did,
which has got to be clearly one of the most successful pivots in history.
And the
true definition of pivot.
Yep. I mean, when we first saw Zach Sapella and crew, he had essentially a light bulb socket.
Right.
For a Wi-Fi enabled LED light.
Which was, you know, sort of the entry level for them. They were going to build other devices as well.
Right. And it did not get funded on Kickstarter.
That fell a little bit short. Fell a lot short.
Yeah. And so anybody listening to this, we're going to put a link in the show notes to the Kickstarter project. And I encourage you to simply go and look at the video.
Yep.
Because I got to tell you that this is a perfect model for how to communicate a concept and an idea in a fun, enjoyable way.
Both of their videos, the last Kickstarter campaign and this one, both. Well done, very well put together. You know, the concept of trying to make a very difficult concept and piece simple to understand. You know, they did a great job. I'm just sorry they're doing it in China. I wish they were doing it here. Everything was here. You know, it kind of breaks my heart.
I mean, it breaks my heart
when they close the box on the video and it's just in Chinese. Everything is Chinese on the outside of it. It doesn't say.
I know.
And it doesn't even say kick. You know, it doesn't even say spark. You know, in.
Maybe it does, but it's just in Mandarin.
Yeah, it's probably so.
Yeah, but seriously, go, folks, go and look at the video, and then the one word that matters in this entire pitch that they do is the word platform.
Yes.
And so that was really what captured the imagination of all the tech people with respect to smart things when they came out. Mm-hmm. It's a platform. There's, you know, they were moving toward a developer kit, an SDK, and the whole thing, and they had a cloud piece in there, and so developers could actually create sensors and create applications that would incorporate smart things in the hub. And this is exactly what Spark has done with Arduino-compatible product. Is really they've made it into a platform. And that's what excites people. And actually, that's what makes it scalable, too. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, I just think it's phenomenal. Just for those of you that haven't looked at the Spark Kickstarter page, 30 days. Is your Spark camp your Kickstarter time period. And after 30 days, I believe they've just got to about 180,000, right? Well, this is of a $200,000 play. This time around, I believe that's it. Zach's probably saying, no, that's not it. But anyway, they fell a little short.
Yeah.
This time around, they were set a very modest goal of $10,000. Well, 9 days into this bad boy, over 2,600 backers, and they're sitting at $234,000.
I know. It's just amazing. Well, and then there's only one, I have to point out one sad thing on the site.
What's that?
It made me feel bad that Zach has 1,360 friends on Facebook, and I don't have that many. So I thought people liked me, but.
As long as you're not making it about you, it's okay.
That's right. Oh, God. Anyway. Yeah. So it's just fun to see this. I mean, I'm really looking at the fact that there is an opportunity for the Twin Cities to become the Internet of Things, the industrial Internet, however you want to term it, Internet of Everything hub. And there's a lot of smart folks here. So this is really cool.
Yeah. So have you invested, Seed?
I have not. I've been a little preoccupied with client work and with getting my dad's house in shape so we can put it on the market.
Yep.
And other than that.
Post haste, we'll get on it.
Yeah, yeah.
I've got to do my investment as well.
Yep, exactly, exactly. So, Phil, we have to switch gears here
Why's that? Because we have to talk
about you and your HTC One.
Oh, yeah.
We mentioned it last week on the show that you had it, but then we were going to wait till this week to find out more about it and your experience.
It actually gave me about 10 days to play with it and get a little bit more accustomed to it. I'm still not accustomed to it, but it's okay. I think it's as attractive as I hoped it would be. It's still to be honest, it's still just a little bit big for me. I was very content with a 4.3-inch screen on my Evo, but, you know, that was a long out-of-date sort of device. But so this is a 4.7-inch screen. It's a little harder. It wouldn't have been a big deal, but two design things that I'm not 100% sure why they did. They moved the top power button from the right side to the left side, making it a little farther reach for your index finger if you're holding it in your right hand. So it's a little farther away. I'm not exactly sure why they did that. It may very much have to do with the fact that that button also serves as a as the outlet for ultraviolet controller for remote. So this also works as a TV remote. So that may have something to do with the design, but that was kind of crazy. And then also HTC has gone from a 3-button interaction to a 2-button interaction, and they moved the home button all onto the right side, left side. It used to be on the right. So that's, yeah, the muscle memory thing coming into play for both of those things. But other than that, it's an all metal device, of course, except for the screen, but, it looks, I held out for the black one, and I
That's
have
black and silver, right?
No, it's just black.
No, but I mean,
yeah, there's black and silver to choose from. Yes. Oh,
okay. Okay.
Yeah. I considered the silver simply because, hey, then it would match my MacBook, but, I decided to wait for the black, and I'm glad I did. I immediately, in fact, I think I commented on this. I actually bought a case for it before I got the phone, and I use a Casemate Barely There design, and I've had that on since I've had it. I did actually drop the phone in between the seats of my car, and it got a little ding on the case, but the case did protect the actual phone, so it's been good.
That is one of the slams that I heard, is the moving of the button. That was a little disconcerting to people, but, you know, I follow this, on Flipboard. I follow a neuroscience, curator. Mm-hmm. So it's all articles about the brain and the mind and, you know, fMRI imaging and all that stuff, just 'cause I'm interested in it. And, one of the things that's curious, you know, rules of thumb are typically bogus, but they at least are a swag at a guideline, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the old adage is it takes 2 weeks to switch your muscle memory so that you start to get into the swing of things. And I found that when I went to a complex password on my iPhone, I had a 4-digit and I went to a much significantly more lengthy access password, just because I've got, you know, LastPass on there and Square Register and all sorts of stuff. And, certainly don't want anybody breaking into it. And it took me 2 weeks for my muscle memory to kick in. So I didn't even have to think about it.
Right.
And I think that, you know, you'll get there, I think.
Oh yeah.
Quickly.
You know, it's just a matter of remember, you know, when you pick it up, it's like, oh, I keep pressing. I'm pressing the headphone jack. Come on, for God's sake, turn on.
Yeah.
Or the home button. It's the back button. And it's like, I'm so confused. But the screen is very nice. I think the camera, which is they're calling it a megapixel display, a megapixel camera. It does take a great, great photo and does shoot nice video. I can't necessarily say it's better than the Apple, because I think Apple sets the standard for the camera, but I can tell you that it's light years ahead of the Evo. And
really?
It's a much better camera. And I like the fact that they've engineered the rear facing camera, with a rear facing microphone as well. And then, I think a couple of the big things that they're pushing is obviously the Beats Audio, or the boom sound is what they call it. It's a Beats Audio integration into two front facing speakers, one on the top, one on the bottom. It really does sound great.
That's what I've heard really, that too, that people have said that the audio is phenomenal.
It does sound great.
Yeah.
So I think they've hit it out of the park. This is the first phone I've ever had with no removable battery. This is the first phone I've ever had with no removable expansion card slot. But I got to tell you, I don't miss it. The Sprint phone only comes with 32 gig. You can get 64 on Verizon, but this is 32 gig. I've got a ton of music on it right now and plenty of apps, but you know, it's not, it's going to be a long time. But, you know, compared to 8 gig on the Evo, yeah, it's going to be plenty for me. But
you know what just fascinated me is I was sitting in, and my daughter, obviously, who spent 5 years at the Apple Store in Mall of America. When I asked her this question, I said, "Hey, would you ever go with an Android phone?" And she looked at me like, "Are you insane?" not a chance. Because I was just, you know, sort of floating a trial balloon to see if she would have any interest whatsoever. And I said, "Well, but here's what's interesting to me. There was a point where I was so tied to the integration between the iPhone and my main iMac or my laptop, whatever." That I would back it up and I would do everything by being tethered. Once it went to an untethered capability, it separated that integration. So it mattered less. Now, Apple had to do that. There's no question about it. But I found that once that happened, I began to use apps that allowed me to put files in places. So, for example, the Dropbox app. So I would stick files in there. I would even put MP3s in there of audiobooks I wanted to listen to. I would just drop them in Dropbox, and then I could open them up and I could literally stream the file to my phone as I was driving or whatever. And so all of a sudden, once I was untethered, I began to realize now it's kind of like I could be agnostic with respect to the type of smartphone that I had.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if you find that same thing, that it's kind of a non-issue.
It is. I mean, it is a non-issue for me. I respect the heck out of the iPhone, and I think that I stick with an Android just because I want to experience different things. I mean, working with Recursive Awesome and developing applications for mobile devices, you know, I think I'm the only guy in the shop right now with an Android phone.
Oh, really?
Okay. But it's one of those things that I'm so tied to the cloud with everything I do. I think that an Android device does make it a lot easier to integrate with Google, which I have a lot of Google, you know, services that I use.
Right.
But there are ways to do that in the iPhone as well. So I don't think it's as, I think it's easier to be platform agnostic. Yeah.
Okay.
Very much so. Okay. Very much so. The only thing I don't like about this is I'm not a big fan of the Sense UI, which is what, you know, the stock user interface that they use. And it's not as intuitive as I'd like it to be. And it's, I'm not a big fan of it, but,
did you do Facebook Home?
No, I haven't put Facebook Home. That just came out this week. I haven't put it on yet, but they have this, what do they call it? The BuzzFeed or whatever they call this thing, which is, you know, the same sort of a thing. It's very Flipboardy. Like it pulls in Facebook and LinkedIn and Twitter and all your accounts on one very much, Metro looking screen. So you can go that route if you'd like. I just haven't done it. I still need a little bit more utilitarian and just good old fashioned buttons. I did find that, well, the one thing that I did like was the TV remote. It's kind of cool.
So really?
It allows you to sync up with your cable service. And so when I turn it on, the screen pops up in a very Netflix sort of style. It gives you all the shows that are on right now with a nice little photo. So you can just kind of scroll through it and you can see what's coming up. And you just press that box and boom, your TV responds. So it's very cool.
So let me ask you kind of a bizarre question. And this is something that I think about a lot because I'm sure like me, you get a lot of people that say, which phone should I buy or what computer should I buy, et cetera.
Uh-huh.
And I found that there's kind of two camps of people who are, let's say, 40, 45 plus. There's the one camp where they're buying everything. You know, they're trying everything. They're really into it. They're tweeting. They're doing all sorts of stuff. And then there's the other camp that I would put my older sister into. You know, God love her, but she says, no, I don't want a smartphone. She's got a flip phone.
Yeah.
And she says, I don't want a smartphone because I just don't want to deal with it. I just don't want to deal with it. I don't want to have that interruption in my life, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And then I have another sister who has an iPhone, and it drives me just insane that she doesn't want, And Gene, if you're listening, I'm sorry to say this, but anyway, but the, it drives me insane that I'll send her an email during the day. She doesn't want me to send one to her work email. So I'll send it to her personal. And she says, I check it once a day in the evening when I get home, her email.
That's it, huh?
That's it. And it's like, wait a minute. What about push email on your phone? Well, I took it off because I didn't want it to ding. Well, you know, you can turn the sound off, the ding sound for incoming mail. Or you can pull mail rather than have it push. Uh-huh. And she's like, I don't even want to talk about it. It's like, oh God. So my expectation is that I'm going to be able to communicate with people at least by email, which has been around for, you know, a couple decades. Well, not quite a couple decades, but, you know, and I don't expect them to be on Twitter and so forth, but are you finding that you're kind of running into those two camps of people? I mean, there's like there's nobody in between.
No, there isn't. And, you know, it's like, you know, the difference is between, you know, my family and, say, my mom, who has a cell phone that has maybe used it once. And, you know, she has an iPad now, but she still doesn't check email and things like that.
Okay.
But then you look around my house during, you know, we're sitting around after dinner and, you know, all sitting in the living room and maybe the TV's on, but you know, everybody's got their phone out.
Yeah, I know.
It's like, for God's sakes, people.
Well, we have a rule when we go out to dinner, especially when the kids come along, when we can maybe corral them all. And well, four of us can go out we have a no phone rule at the dinner table. So it doesn't matter if it dings, it doesn't matter if it rings, just turn the sound off. You just don't touch it.
Except if it's yours.
No. Seriously.
All right.
Unless you warn somebody in advance that I'm expecting this call, and when it comes in, I have to take it regardless.
I got you.
You know, that kind of thing. Yep. Or if it's an emergency, we put an emergency dialer in for my dad.
Yep.
And when that thing happened, when the dialer came through, you know, I don't care where I was or if it's 2 a.m, I would, I'd answer that. So.
Yep.
Yep. Yep. Yep. Yep.
So anyway, I enjoy the phone a great deal, and I'm looking forward to, you know, I haven't taken a ton of pictures with it. I'm not one of those picture taking fiends, but, it's all good. It's all good. I'm very impressed with it. I like the style. I like the fact that it's an all metal phone. The one thing that drove me crazy about every time I picked up a Galaxy S, it was just like, God, this thing feels so plasticky.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And again, the audio just kicks ass. It just sounds really good.
Well, in a little segue here.
Yes, a segue.
Our pals at the Mass Merchant Target.
The Mass Merchant. There you go.
Have partnered with Facebook to push its digital cartwheel to shoppers.
Right.
And I'll just throw this out to you. Do you know anyone who buys stuff through Facebook?
No.
Why do you go to Facebook?
Do I know anybody that doesn't delete this stuff from their news feed?
Yeah.
Yes, I know a lot of people that do that. I spend way too much time deleting this stuff from my feed. So, no, I don't. But remember, Steve, that we're looking at this from a more studious perspective, not necessarily a social integration perspective. It's not something we grew up with. And I think it's, you know, ads in Facebook or the ability to purchase in Facebook is new to us, but to many people, it's just the way things are. It's like commercials on TV were to us. It's a different world. So I always try to take that perspective with a grain of salt. I find it a big pain in the ass. But
yeah. But there's 750 million people in Facebook, so everybody looks at it as an opportunity.
All I know is Facebook has got to figure out ways to make money. And
of course.
Target is looking for unique opportunities to bring people into the stores. I don't think Target faces as big a, you know, crunch of showrooming as, say, you know, say a Best Buy, but they always got to look for new ways to bring people in.
Well, so this is just starting to gain some traction, but I did a tweet about Facebook scam alert, what really happens when you like.
Yeah.
And it was about when you click on something and like, and so they talked about this one particular thing that was hitting, which was a prism, looked like, you know, the back of Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon album. And, it, you know, you were supposed to, it had a caption that's OMG, it really works. And okay. So you could click it. And if you liked it, then it would go to a like farmer, which is a company that would then, you know, slam it out to all your friends and et cetera, et cetera. Because every time you like something, you know, you could like any of this stuff in Facebook, you can turn it off.
Yep.
But like farming is extending beyond scammers now, and it's going to e-commerce providers as well, because everybody's trying to drive towards social commerce.
Mm-hmm.
So if I buy something and you look at that on my wall and go, oh, Steve just bought that. Well, I was kind of looking at that category. Maybe I should buy that one because he always does due diligence on this stuff.
And by the way, this is true. So if you follow Steve.
Well, but seriously, do you like stuff? Do you click like?
On occasion, you know, usually it's just a post from, you know, a friend or something like that, or a statement. I don't usually click on liking a product or a picture, because I know that does open up a whole big can of whoop ass, but I know that my kids, like, for example, every year when birthdays roll around, you know, I always get a lot of people sending me birthday greetings on Facebook. And I'm one of those people that likes to make sure that it's not just necessarily a group thing, but it's also an individual thing. So I'll do a response to everybody who says something greets me with a happy birthday. And my son is saying, why don't you just hit like on all of them and move on?
Well, there you go.
I don't know. I'm trying to keep that thing as personal as you can, because it's very easy, especially with the amount of ads that are coming through now, to, you know, make that a very impersonal space on Facebook.
Yeah. Well, the one thing that I look at is, I've been frustrated for a long time that I couldn't do an RFP, a request for proposal sort of thing. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And the example that I bring up is when I was going to buy a digital SLR, my first camera, my first non-film camera, I should say, SLR.
And for you kids listening at home, film is a,
Right. And so I had one friend who was not only a dyed-in-the-wool Nikon fan, the guy had 15 lenses. And then another guy that I know really well had Canon. It was exactly the same way. And they would have this nice friendly rivalry over whose camera was better and which lens was better. And, this one vignettes and this one has color, chroma aberrations and yada, yada, yada. And I literally could have gone either way. And I did my own homework and I tried out two different cameras and the price point I wanted. And I ultimately went Nikon. Now, here's the kicker. The kicker is I had to do all the work. I had to make all the decisions. I had to decide who had the best price. Some had bundles where they'd throw in the case, or they'd do a certain kind of lens, or they'd throw in some filters or whatever.
Right.
And I sat back during that entire process, because it played out over probably 2 months before I made the decision to buy my first camera. And I'm going through it again, by the way, because I'm going to buy a D800, and it's just the body's like $2,700.
A man of vast wealth that you are.
Yeah, right. But it's a full frame camera and great low light, and the images are unbelievable. Anyway, point being is I sat back at that point. This is probably in 2004, and I said to myself, gosh, if I could do a request for proposal or a request for quote and send it to Canon and send one to Nikon and let them come after me and tell me why I should buy either one of them. Because whichever way you go, that's the way you're going to stay. So once you capture that customer, you've got that lifetime value. And there isn't anything in place. And this whole social commerce thing, I think, is kind of an interesting take on it. But it's a shotgun approach. And instead, you know, once I made the decision to go Nikon, I've now had 4 Nikon bodies. I've had probably half a dozen different lenses, and I bought remotes, and I bought all kinds of, you know, different accessories, you know, a flash kit and all kinds of stuff that's all Nikon. And so the lifetime value of Steve Borsch to one of those camera companies is pretty significant.
Yep.
And so I look at that and I say to myself, you know, once you get somebody to move in a certain direction, the value of them over their course of their life is pretty significant. So it's interesting to me that there's nothing in place to allow me to throw something out there and let vendors come after me. And so it's the same way with cars. You know, I'm gonna probably get another Prius, and I'm looking at the plug-in Prius. I'm also considering the Chevy Volt. And so whichever way I go, that's going to be a, you know, a car that I'm probably going to stick with for quite some time.
Yep.
You know, buy the things. And so have you ever seen anything out there like that?
No, I haven't, but it sounds intriguing. That's for sure. It, of course, the question is, would corporate America respond to that? Would retail America say, yeah, well, let's go to them instead of them coming to us?
Yeah.
That would be nice.
Yeah, exactly. Nice. Exactly. Hey, one thing we didn't mention, we should throw it in because I think Graham's going to join us shortly.
Okay.
Is the internet sales tax bill.
Oh, that's right.
We didn't talk about that. And that's kind of a big deal. I was initially really, really nervous about it because we sell all these digital downloads for our business,
yeah,
you know, our trend products.
And you don't want to pay your fair share. So.
Well, but here's why, is because, and there's a state sales tax direction with this as well. And so they're like, for example, in Minnesota, what you're really supposed to do as a business is you're supposed to do it by zip code. Mm-hmm. And so you'll have, you know, a county and a city, you know, or municipality tax, and it might be different across the street. So you got to do it by zip code. And it's going to be a frickin' nightmare to try to report those sales taxes. We've had the state of Michigan coming after us, even though they say that you have to sell $350,000 worth of digital products to the, in the state, in order to allow them to come after you for tax. They've now sent us 2 letters, you know, about reporting the tax and paying the tax and so forth. And it's like, you know, just, hey, get off our back. But this is going to be a big deal, even though the threshold is $1 million. Mm-hmm. So you got to sell $1 million worth of digital goods in a specific state before you qualify. But still,
and that, is that over a year period?
That's
of
over
time,
a year.
Or is that cumulative?
No, that's a year.
A year.
Yeah. But
I'm not going to worry about that right now.
Well, I'll tell you what, though, the reporting on this is going to be a frickin' nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at it and said, oh my God, what if we had sold, you know, because like New York State and California, because I'm in Manhattan, we have done a substantial amount of business in each one of those states. And so it's possible that, that we could get dinged. And boy, if we even had to break down one of those states by zip code and try to figure out what each one of the tax, sales tax pieces were, oh my God. Cause I don't even think there's a place you can do it. Hey, here's Graham. Let me add this guy. He's on his iPhone. Graham, how you doing, pal?
I'm doing great. Excuse me. I'm in Brainerd and I have to clear my throat because I was rudely greeted with snow up here.
Oh my God. Wow.
And winds howling out of the north, gusting to 35. So all I have to say is, oh, yeah, let me out on a boat. Uh-huh.
Hell of an opener. Hell of an opener.
Oh, my God.
And the ice is still on most of the lakes, including the lake we're on the Whitefish Chain. And it shifts around. So it looked clear to go out from the shore yesterday afternoon, and this morning we woke up and all the ice is blown right up to our shore. So
you couldn't even get a boat out if you wanted to.
Not at this shore, but it's my brothers-in-law that are the big fishermen, and they're going to be trailing their boat over to a spot where they can plunk it in, and then you just have to watch out that you don't get trapped by the ice. You know, if you go out in a boat and you're you're not paying attention, pretty soon you might find, whoops, we can't go anywhere. We're
right.
stuck.
Oh, geez.
So it's quite the record late opener, record late ice out up here and all over the state, I guess. So, but it's, the sun's breaking out now, and I'm warm inside my toasty car. So
there you go.
Yeah.
Well, Graham, we were kind of waiting to talk about this Instratus deal with Dell until you hopped on. What do you think? What can you share with
us? Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, it's Instratus now. That's okay, because it's much easier to say Instratus, and people knew them as Instratus for what, 3.5 years or more before they changed their name. Apparently, they had a name conflict, so they added an I and a syllable. They were acquired by Dell at an unannounced price, but it's a very good deal. I do know that because actually I'm an insider on this company, so I know things I can't say. But they're very excited to be joining Dell. All the employees are coming over. I think it's upwards of 40 employees, most of whom are in the Twin Cities, but I think maybe 10 or 12 are in other locations, the Bay Area, Atlanta, and maybe one or two other locations. So they're going to be a big part of Dell's attempt to transform itself to more of a, you know, they're well in the process of transforming themselves to more of a services company.
Right.
So they will be in the lead of integrating Dell's cloud strategy, along with other acquisitions they've previously made, one of which is a company called Boomi, B-O-O-M-I, which does cloud integration. And Stratus is more about cloud management and governance and compliance, allowing enterprises to go to the public clouds as well as hybrid and private clouds. So, yeah, it's a big win for them. David Bagley, the CEO, and George Reese, the CTO, who are the two co-founders, have fancy new titles, which you can read about online, I'm sure. And the deal is closed. I was surprised.
That was
I heard it was coming, because, you know, I'm an insider. I helped them get launched and pretty close to these folks, and they gave me the heads up that something was coming, but I didn't know who it was. So I'm thinking, okay, is it going to be Amazon? Is it going to be Google? And wow, out of left field, suddenly comes Dell, and I see the announcement pop up early Monday morning. And this is the second startup out of Minnesota, tech startup that's been acquired by Dell in the last, year and a half or so, compelling.
Yeah. Yeah.
Being the first one for, I think that worked out to $800 or $900 million they were acquired for. They're a much larger, further along company than Instratus, of course. The Minneapolis, Austin, Texas connection grows larger.
Well, here's what impressed me about it. You know, I mean, Instratus has really done well with being what they call cloud agnostic, right? Working with OpenStack and Rackspace and Windows Azure and so on, and Amazon Web Services and all of that. So it gets Dell into that game. It allows them to integrate what they're doing with various cloud providers. And I know, for example, that I just went with a dedicated server at a major hosting company that broke a price on a dedicated server that's managed, plus you also have web hosting manager, so you can fiddle with everything if you want. And the reason they were able to do that was because of Dell's server blade strategy. And so you've got a rack with a bunch of cards in it, and those cards, each one of them is a computer server. And and they've broken some price points, and they've got some great management capability. And this just really adds to that. So it's a really, I think it's, you know, I normally don't look at acquisitions like this and think that it's strategically really smart, because it's tough to integrate companies. I mean, I've been there with, you know, Vignette and Lawson, and it's not easy. And this
the percentages aren't high of the ones that are successfully integrated. That's
right.
Sure.
This one makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, so. It really does. And you know, I admire the Dell leadership for what they're doing. I mean, they aren't sitting around. They're aggressively acquiring, and, you know, they're still in the process of going private. That shoe has to drop yet. So it's an interesting situation to be watching. It's highly fluid.
Yeah.
And definitely a case study in how a large giant tech company transforms itself. You know, and the jury's still out as to whether or not it's going to all work, but you know, they do have a ton of enterprise customers, and I think this is at least the third, maybe the fourth cloud-related acquisition they've done, in addition to two or three, I think, storage acquisitions, of which Compellent was the third, as I recall. So they are transforming in front of our eyes, and it's certainly worth watching. And congratulations to all the Instratius folks, and they were partying big on Monday. I guess Monday was the announcement day and the closing date.
Wow.
It's kind of weird. I'd never seen that happen before. I figured, oh, it'll be closing at the end of the month or something, but it's a done deal.
Well, that was smart of Dell, because it kept them off the market so somebody else didn't come in and offer more dough.
Yes. And I gathered that, you know, this is a process that's gone on for 2 or 3 months, I'm pretty sure. And I suspect there could have been others that were, you know, snooping around too. And of course, all of this was managed by their board and their management. You know, on their board is Jeff Hink of Eldorado Ventures, which is morphing into Icon Ventures. And Jeff is certainly highly experienced at having his portfolio companies get acquired and participating in that. So I'm sure he had a role in this too, having been very involved in Compellent from day one, and of course helped them through that whole acquisition process as well. So it's a big win for the Twin Cities tech community to see another, a highly successful exit.
Well, Graham, listen, I'm glad that you were able to join us at the, you know, near the end of our podcast. You know, I'm so glad you could tell us a little bit more about Instratius and Dell, but most importantly, you're here for Steve's security tip of the week.
Sirens going on.
we still haven't made a little sounder for that yet, but we'll get there.
Well, so my security tip of the week is something that may be coming, and we won't need no stinking passwords, or will we?
Okay. Do tell.
Well, so first off, Apple bought, as you probably recall, a biometric security company called Authentec for $356 million. I think that closed last year.
Okay, now wait a minute.
And
we've been able to deftly combine Apple Talk and the security tip of the week. Very nice, Steve.
Isn't this fabulous? That's amazing how this stuff works.
So anyway, they bought Authentec for $356 million.
Yep. And then they filed a patent. And the patent has been approved for biometric features for e-commerce and security. And there's rumors, very strong rumors now, that Apple will release the iPhone 5S with biometric fingerprint authorization and access.
Ooh,
and
I'm waiting for the retina scan myself, but ooh.
Yeah. And so when I first saw this, I thought to myself, hey, this is awesome. We won't need passwords to get into our phone. Just stick our thumb on it. Won't life be wonderful?
Yep.
Then I thought, no, I should probably go out and read up on this and figure some stuff out and see if it really is that great. And I found, and I'll put a link in the show notes, I found a PDF from the National Security Agency, and the NSA talks about false accept rates, which are called FARs, and they go into
love those government acronyms.
Yeah, and they go into how an attacker can actually use a copy of the biometric characteristic of a valid user to make a fake one.
Uh-oh.
And it's called a physical spoof attack, and so it's still hard to crack, but it's less hard than a good, strong, long password. You know, the 128-bit AES encryption that is the government considers to be top secret, that has an approximate strength of like a 1 in 10 to the 38th power, which is, I don't know, like some septillion number. And so if you have a good, long password with a lot of special characters in it, that's the best way to do it. But there's always this trade-off between security and convenience. And you can have the best security, but like I always tell people, if somebody walked up to my front door, it would probably take 4 or 5 good kicks and somebody could kick the door open. And so I could probably, you know, spend 10 grand on security and then park a tank in my front yard just to ward off potential attackers or have hire snipers to sit around my house. But it's probably not terribly convenient or smart. And so looking at the trade-off. So anyway, so my security tip is even if Apple comes out with biometric security, it's not going to be the be-all, end-all. It'll be a first step. And and we'll all probably use multiple kinds of security. I would encourage people to do two-step authentication. And Google's made that pretty easy. A lot of people are jumping on the Google Authenticator app for your phone. And so that's my security tip of the week.
Right. Nicely done,
good
sir.
Good one.
Thank you.
Yes. I'm looking forward to that 5S. Come on.
I know.
5S.
Let's hurry up, right?
That's right. I got to upgrade.
Well,
I'm ready to upgrade, but I got to wait now.
Have you guys heard rumors? I'm just starting to read these about how the carriers are watching T-Mobile's moves toward non-subsidized phones because they all want to get out of that business.
Right, right.
And do you think that's going to happen?
I don't know. What do you think, Phil?
If the price of phones comes down, I mean, I believe the iPhone has the largest margin of any phone out there right now, which is like some 40%, I believe. Am I right on that? No, it's not quite that high, but it's somewhere like 30%. So
yeah, it's up there.
I think if they can narrow the margins a bit, then if you take the subsidize off, then I think a lot of the market is going to help drive the price down a little bit, but it's still going to be more expensive. I don't know. It's nice to see that you can actually move from the opportunity to not be locked up for 2 years.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I think this installment plan thing that T-Mobile is doing is going to be very popular. My son just did that, and the store was unbelievably crowded. You know, not everybody was getting an iPhone, but I do think that they're having big success with that. I think that particularly, you know, the younger folks are willing to do that rather than get locked in. And then they can come in and pay off their phone anytime they want to, you know. They don't have to stretch it out over the whole 24 months at $20 a month, you know. And then also T-Mobile is aggressively offering the trade-in of iPhone 4s or iPhone 4Ss.
Yeah.
I think I could get like, what was it, 220-ish for an iPhone 4S? But I don't want to do that, of course. But you know, they were advertising that. And then you get the iPhone 5 free when you do that trade-in, I guess. Or you get the down payment for free. You know, wait a minute. They get $99 for the upfront payment on the iPhone 5. So if you trade it in, you cover that plus more, you know, plus more of your installments. So it's a pretty easy way to get into an iPhone, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I would suspect that the others will try to follow because they're going to lose some business to T-Mobile if they don't.
Well, all I can say is that I just need to figure out how to steal one of you guys' credit cards. Then I'll get my phone for free.
Well, there's that.
No?
No.
Okay.
Well. No. Because we know where you live.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
We'll come after you.
Well, gentlemen.
We don't care. Yeah.
So, well, what's coming up as far as events this week? We've got, the Visualizing Neighborhoods Hackathon for Good on the 25th of May. Oops, we're out of order.
Exploring Big Data on the 15th.
The new MEMA event is set for the 15th. That should be interesting. And so what else? And things are slowing down a mite. Is that what I'm seeing here?
Yeah, a little bit. There are some other events that I know are on the Minnesota High Tech Association calendar, but I can't remember what they are off the top of my head. But they have a pretty extensive calendar of upcoming events, too, and it never hurts for folks to check that, mhta.org.
Are they going to be as massive as the spring conference?
Oh, nothing like that, but, you know, little seminar things and special meetings, one of a kind of things. But then this National Day of Civic Hacking is coming on June 1, right? Did you mention that?
Yep.
Or?
Yep.
That's, yeah, yep. And the I.O. Festival.
Yep.
The I.O. Festival, June 5th to 8th. And,
any word on your free tickets?
I'm still waiting. I'm hoping that if there's some dropouts at the end, they'll ping me. But I'm not holding my breath for that press pass. But
gotcha.
We'll hear all about it. I'm sure we'll hear all about how it goes and maybe can talk about that a little bit later. And then, of course, the big WWDC later in June. What is that, June 20th or is it June 14th or something like that?
I thought it was the 18th.
Yeah, something like that.
It's sold out.
June 10th through the 14th.
Oh, the 10th.
The 10th.
Oh,
yeah.
It's that soon. I wonder if we can find any of our friends who are going this time. We'll have to look into that.
Some digging.
But, right. It'll be interesting to see what iOS 7 is going to be, which I think is going to be announced there.
Yep. It'll be interesting to see. It'll be interesting. It's going to be, again, there's always something happening, and we'll talk more about it next week on...
The Minivate Gang Podcast.
Podcast.
Take care, gents.
Thanks, you guys.
Take care, guys. Yep, talk to you later. Have a good weekend.
You too.